What's going on, gang? Welcome to a brand new Tuesday episode of the Lev Fur Show. Hope you're having a fucking great week so far. Just wanted to say you can listen to this episode ad-free on the Patreon, patreon.com/LevFur. There's a bonus episode every single week, so get your fucking ass on the Patreon. That's all I can tell you. And this month, we have the next Lev Fur and Friends at the Stand. It's on June 24th. If you're in New York on June 24th, come to this fucking show. It starts at 10 o'clock. We're going to be partying. We're going to have a fucking great time that night. It's genuinely one of my favorite things I do. And I didn't expect that. I expected these shows to be a kind of a pain in the ass, and they're just not. So, Josh, you were just on the
you're
last
gonna,
one.
That's how you're going to intro me?
No, I'm going to re-intro you, but this is like a... my guest today is Josh Adam Myers. I'm going to give you the whole thing. I'm going to give you the whole intro.
I want the whole spiel.
Dude, this guy, fucking funny ass comic.
Thank you, buddy.
But also just a great guy and one of the coolest people I've ever met.
Thank you. Thank you. It's taken years to get this comfortable. You'll find the older you get, the more it's easy for you to like settle into your groove. You know what I mean? Because when I was your age, I was just a fucking, I was just partying nonstop. And then in your 30s, you're like figuring shit out. And especially when you dive into comedy, it's just, especially starting comedy in Los Angeles, which is such a smoke and mirrors type place and superficial and everybody wants something. It's like, you don't know who to trust or whatever. And then one day you'll get into your, you get like about 38, you'll be like, oh man, all this, why am I worrying about all of this stuff? It's just like, this is the fun part of life. And then you just get it. And that's where I'm at right now. That's why I can move to New York now and be like, this is going to be the shit. Do you know what I mean?
Right. Dude, I had a similar feeling today where I hit somebody up to do a podcast. And every time I do this podcast, I mean, people on the comments is just people shitting on me. Like, it's like, this guy sucks, whatever, right? And I was like, why am I even asking to do this show? But then I was like, and I got that anxiety feeling of like, now I'm going to fucking read comments about people just saying I suck cock.
Yeah.
And I felt that feeling in my chest again of like that fucking fear. Yeah. And then I was like, wait, this is comments on the internet. This is not real.
They're not real. And first of all, biggest advice I can give anybody that does any kind of if you make art and you put it out online, put it out there and do not read the comments, because there's always going to be somebody that shits on. You could put up, dude, think about this. There's those videos, there's America's Got Talent, where like the guy goes on stage and he's like, you know, my wife died of cancer and I'm doing this song to honor her and I only have one leg and I'm you know, mentally challenged. And then he sings a song and it's the most beautiful thing in the world and it's got a million likes and it's still got 20,000 dislikes. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
This is a beautiful thing. And you can go all the way from like, you know, Beethoven's Ninth Symphony, one of the greatest pieces of music ever written. There's still a fucking chunk of like 30,000 dislikes because there are trolls out there. So, because dude, I get it, because I do a music podcast and, you know, the whole thing of the music podcast, Lev, was it started as a way to honor my friend that passed away. I don't know anything about music that wasn't in my life as a kid or like, you know, high school and college. And like, I know my bands, but I don't know every band. But because I do a lot of music comedy, people assume that I do. But the whole podcast, I'm telling people I don't know. That's why I'm trying to listen to these records and talk about them. And dude, every fucking episode I put out, or anytime if you go on Reddit or you go on anything about the podcast, there are people shitting on me. This guy knows nothing. This guy, why is he hosting the show? Why did Spotify give him a podcast? Why is Rolling Stone supporting this?
Right.
And it's just, people are going to decide whatever the fuck they want. And because of that wall of this camera and this keyboard, and they're never going to be in your face. Cause dude, you're a big dude. Nobody's going to say that shit in front of you. You know what I mean? Because you'll fucking knock them out. But that's so behind this protection, they are going to say whatever the fuck they want because they're not identified. So you cannot read it.
And the only place that like that shit can live is in your head. So like when I was talking to the booker, I was like, I'm just going to not let this live in my head. Like, who gives a fuck? And then I immediately forgot about it. And I was like, now I'm going to be excited to go do the show. So like,
they get off on knowing you reacting. If you read it and, you know, you have your moment of like, oh God, what are, you know, like these assholes and like, what, you know, why I'm just trying to make something to entertain people, you know? And, but if you react to that online, they won.
Dude, I blocked one guy. This some dude on Instagram like commented on a post. It might have even been like a post where I was like, oh, my grandfather died. And he commented like a shitty joke. And like just not wanting to deal with like a troll, I just blocked him. Because I was like, I just don't need this. Like I just, It wasn't even like a, I'm fucking mad. You got, I was just like, I don't care. Like I just don't want to see this. Mm-hmm. So I just blocked a guy, like four different accounts. Like obviously him and like, it went to like, what the fuck? Like you blocked me for making a joke. And then like I just blocked that one. Cause I'm like, now this is funny. Then by the fifth account, he was like, hey man, I just want to know like why you blocked me. Like I was just trying to be funny. Like he went to like apology mode basically.
Cause he's a dick. You'd be like, I blocked you cause you're a dick.
I was like, dude, you got a lot of time, baby.
Just let me live. Let me live, man. Let us listen. All the people out there, we're just trying to make a living. Yeah. That's all we want to do is just make a living doing something without a regular boss. So if you don't like it, just don't watch it. Turn it off and shit on somebody else. There's so many other things you can shit on.
Yeah, dude.
So many other things. Sports. Shit on sports. Can you imagine?
But we're telling them to do the same thing. We're like, those guys are like trying to make a fucking living shooting hoops. And now we're like, shit on those guys.
Yeah.
It's the same game.
But they're making millions of dollars, Lev. Millions. Yeah. Like Russell Westbrook, who's one of my favorite basketball players of all time. Like, you know, the guy is making, I think, $40 million a year. And, you know, somebody poured popcorn on his head. And like, he gets a lot of shit. Russell gets a lot of shit from fans, and it happens a lot. They'll give him the finger right in his face, and it looks like it bothers him, but he just keeps playing hard. But that's what I'm saying is it's like at the end of the day, like, yeah, he got popcorn dropped on his head, but then he's, you know, riding home in a gold Bentley. So,
yeah, but still, like, shit just, like, you can't control that shit is just going to make you feel bad. You know what I mean? Like the other night, you were there when I fucking at a comedy club. I was doing a set and like, it was like a nightmare scenario. There was like a bunch of people walking by. It was an outdoor show, but I was like happy to be doing a fucking set. Yes. But like, I'm in the middle of the set and all of a sudden a guy yells out from the back and is like, I'm doing a joke or I'm like, I'm from a small town. And he just goes, you should move back. And I was like, so surprised. I was like, what makes you say that? Like, it just was so left field. He's like, because you're not funny. And that was the only time in my whole career that anybody's ever yelled something like that out. I was like, I didn't even know hecklers like this fucking exist. You know what I mean? So, but I was just so taken back by it. I spent like 5 minutes just talking to this guy. And like, there was a dude in like fully bound to an electric wheelchair sitting in like in front of him. And I was like, dude, even this guy in the wheelchair is like, God, I wish that bus would have hit that guy instead. And like, I'm still doing well with the crowd, you know, and it's just this, but this one table just fucking hated me. But like,
it was the most, I love how you explained it because I was there. And yeah. I remember you came up and told me, but I had already heard a little hoopla about it from one of the servers.
Server say to you?
She just said and then you got mad at me when I said the phrase I'm going to use. I was like, this table was giving Lev the business. And you were like, I gave them the business. And I was like, yes, of course you gave them the business. You're the comic with the microphone. But in their head, they're giving you, because I just call anytime somebody is like being a dick or whatever. It's just they're giving them the business. And it's and you're not an aggressive, like mean person. You're just doing comedy and you're just trying to entertain this table. And they, you know, reacted the way that they did. And
well, it was literally a gay white guy from Brooklyn got really upset that I said the words Chinese guy.
Yeah, dude, that's offensive
like,
now.
I didn't even say it in like putting down Chinese people. Like I literally just said the words Chinese guy and this guy like fucking flipped. And it's always a white dude from Brooklyn who just freaks the fuck out when you talk about like any other race. And it wasn't even a joke at an Asian's expense, but he snapped. But
he wanted because you said Chinese people, he wanted it to be racist so he could just dislike you.
Of course.
Whatever it was about you, Because that's the thing about being a comic, you know, you're going up there, and unless you're there, they know you from something already, you have to, in a sense, win them over. And he saw you as probably like this good looking kid, straight guy, you know, from the small town. And once he said small town, then these people from Brooklyn and big cities are like, oh, he's probably a racist. He's probably a this. He's probably, he has no idea about culture or anything. Yeah, so he's going to say something racist. So you didn't, but you said a race, you know, you described one race and then he jumped on it. And then you said to me, this looks like the wokest table I've ever seen in my life. And I walked out there to go look and I was like, holy shit, dude, you were not lying, man. Yeah. They had every race, color and creed sitting there. And I was like, yeah, that was a no-win situation. Plus, you're outdoors.
Oh, it was brutal. Dude, there was a concert line walking through the whole fucking set to go to a concert next door. It was just, it was so fucking rough. But at one point I said to the guy, I was like, I was just talking to him. I was like, man, some people should kill themselves. And like, I was, you know, joking about him. Mm-hmm. And the crowd laughed. And some people started clapping and shit. The dude in the wheelchair is pointing back at this guy. He's like, he's a fucking asshole. Like, to the dude who's interrupting the show. But I was just like so shocked. I was like, I told the guy, I was like, man, like, we're already in such a fragile situation. Like, this is a show that is really hard to do right now. And you still would be like, you know what? I don't like this guy. I'm going to interrupt it even more. I'm like, I can't believe the entitlement of that. Like, this is the conversation I'm having with this fucking guy. But like, you are one of those, when I told you this story, and this is a big theme I've noticed with you. You're one of those guys who's just way nicer to like, you're one of those dudes who's like, even if you're because when I met you, I mean, the first time I feel like we really talked was like,
it was at DeRosa's house. Yeah.
Yeah. New Year's. And you started a conversation with me and you're ahead of me in comedy, but you took the time to like be a cool dude. And like, that's always to me is just, I'm like, I'm going to like that guy forever. Whenever somebody does.
But like, here's the thing is anybody that, cause I got, you know, I started in 2008 in Los Angeles and I remember my friend Angelo Bowers, who's not with us anymore. Funniest comic in the world. Look him up. Angelo would always, he was a very like, shy person with a lot of anxiety. And I just came from a very, you know, I was like, I partied for years in the rave scene. You're meeting people and you're cool with everybody because we're all doing drugs and then, you know, and playing music and then college. And then eventually it's like you move out to Los Angeles. And to me, I was always a very like outgoing person to meet people because people are what makes this whole journey fucking cool. Do you know what I mean?
Life is life.
If you're by yourself and you don't know anybody, life is a boring, boring thing. Like I respect anybody that can, like, I know this girl that I went to high school with and her husband moved out to Breckenridge, Colorado. And that's where they're going to live with their dog, you know, in a fucking cabin.
Yeah. They're doing the thing.
They're doing their thing. And I respect that, but I like to be around people. And so I would just get into the comedy scene and Angela would always be like, dude, I can't believe you just went up there and talked to Kyle Kinane. And I'm like, oh, I don't know who he is. He's like, well, he's like a big comic here. And it's like, there's like a hierarchy. And I remember even when I was at the Comedy Store before it became a really successful business, because when I got there, it was like falling apart in 2008, 2009. And I remember there was a door guy that said to me, he goes, you know, you come here and you act like you know everybody. And because me and him, like both, I was dating. I was hooking up with a chick and then he tried to hook up with her. And I think it might have happened. And he kind of tried to give me like a talking to. This guy, Austin, is no longer there. He's out of comedy.
Right.
So I won.
He's out of life. I took his life.
I killed him. I actually told that wheelchair guy to back up over his head. Yeah. That was at the show. But I remember he said that to me and I was like, why aren't I allowed to talk to Sebastian?
Right.
You know what I mean? And if they're like, and if I go up to a bigger comic and they're going to be a dick, then they're a dick. You know what I mean? It's like, you should want to meet the younger people. Now I understand, you know, you're getting, you know, when you're a big comic, everybody wants to talk to you. But if you see somebody enough, it's like, yo, if you know they're a comedian,
right.
Do it. So then I remember then you start doing comedy and then because of those conversations, it started getting in my head. And then I remember being very, you know, when I started getting a little bit up, you know, past the open mic doing regular shows, when I'd see new open micers come, I wasn't as accepting towards them because you don't know how long they're going to be around, this, that, and the other thing. And I remember there was this one kid, fuck, I can't remember his name, but it's important because I remember he was talking to me and I was like, all right, dude, whatever, man, trying to kind of blow him off. And I was being very egotistical. And then within 6 months, him and another comic did this big casting call for the movie Project X, and they got it. And they just, you know, blew up in the sense that making way more money than I was right, in Hollywood movies. Jonathan Daniel Brown and another kid named Oliver. Oliver was the one that I was kind of a dick to. And from that moment, I was like, why would I ever, you know, you never know who's going to surpass you. You never know who is going to, you know, blow up. And so you just,
and some like it, like I remember I got really mad at a comic who I felt like I was ahead of, and because like I asked them for a favor because we were like good friends, like, you know, and I was like, hey, I'm going to ask you for a favor. Like, could you do this for me? And he like cold shouldered me. So then I was like, what the fuck? Like, I thought we're like good friends. And like, I was talking to another comic and I was like, should I like send him a text about this and be like, what the fuck, dude? Like, I thought we were cool, like this and that, whatever. And he was like, no, just don't say anything because like, you don't know what's going to happen. Like, over the next 5 years, he might blow the fuck up. And then, you know, and then 10 years later, you blow the fuck up. And it's like, you don't know. And it's like, not only are they hitting different levels, but they're going to change. Because like, I felt like when I was like 21, I was like, oh, I'm ahead of everybody in my class. And now I'm like, oh, I feel like I'm fucking behind a lot of people.
Like, you're at the exact place you're supposed to be. That's the thing that I dealt with very early on when I was young, which was what I wanted. I wanted more than what I had. And, you know, I started with Gerard Carmichael, my friend Byron Bowers, Angelo, Rel, a few other guys from L.A.
Yeah.
And that was like my class. And I remember Gerard just, we were all doing open mics. And then the next thing you know, Gerard got passed at the Laugh Factory. And the next thing you know, he's, you know, opening for Daniel Tosh. And he's got a big manager and a big agent. And right, it was like he was passing the store. And it was like he was plucked and just taken to the promised land. And that like killed me for some reason. Because I was like, man, I'm funny. Why is he getting everything? And in a sense, I feel like it didn't ruin our friendship at all, but it definitely made me carry around a lot of baggage I didn't need to carry because he got what he was supposed to get when he was supposed to get it. Was he better than me at that time? 100%. Did he have a fully formed set and a fully formed voice at a very young age in comedy? Yes. So you can't ever worry about any of that. Wherever you're at, is you're getting exactly what you're putting into it. Because if you're exerting everything you have to make this dream happen, you know, you're at the place you're supposed to be. Because when you're ready, you will get more. And if you want what other people are getting, that's only going to keep holding you back. You can have a chip on your shoulder and be like, all the no's I'm getting are just going to make me better. Because those are the best things that anybody's ever said to me was no. It's just like, okay, cool. Like the store for a long time said no, no, no. And I just was like, cool, I'll just go and do all these other shows. And every time I come back here, I'll be funnier. And every time I'll come back, and it just kept getting better and better and better until they were just like, well, you're undeniable now. So now we have to let you in.
Right.
It's you know, it's, but as far as like, you know, dealing with other people, the main thing, I was just saying this last night to Liz at the Cellar, we were talking about the Gerard situation, and you know, we're talking about Rami, and because Rami blew up so quickly too. I remember him getting to LA and then within, you know, a few months he was doing all the shows. A few months after that he had a TV show, and you know,
well, he's got a great show, and it's like a great unique perspective. He tapped into a thing, which is
and he's great, and I'm not him, so I couldn't, and I would never got jealous. But it's just, we were talking about that. This has sparked a conversation, and I was like, the people that make it in this business are the people that keep their head down, do all the work, stay out of the results, but most importantly, treat others well with respect. Everybody with respect. And I'm talking about the comics, to the door guys, to the fucking servers. You know what I mean? If you're a nice dude, you're going to get everything, because everybody they want to book you. The stand wants to book you because they like you and you treat everybody with respect.
That's something like I for a long time was like, I wish, because like guys like you who like, I'm like, you know, and Big J is another guy like that where he's just like the nicest guy. Like, and you know, like Shane Gillis, like Ari Shaffir. Ironically, everybody who people think is like, these are the assholes of, they're the sweetest people in the world.
Sweetest, yeah.
Like, they're the most quality people, and they will go out of their way to like be nicer to you than they need to be.
Yeah.
And like that your whole crew is like that. And like, I was always like, man, I really want to be that kind of person because I'm so naturally wired to not be. I have that thing in me of like, why is this fucking kid sitting next to me? Like, and now, like, even today, I catch myself like working against it. Whereas, like, a kid messaged me that that I wouldn't book on a show, but like, was like, hey, I'd really love to come to your show. And instead of just ignoring him, I was like, hey, man, honestly, like, I'm not even doing any shows like during the dates you're here. So, like, I hope you have a great trip while you're in town, whatever. And I was like, all right, I took the time to do the thing. And I'm
Yeah.
like, just do the thing. That's like, I want to do that enough times where it becomes, fucking nature, because like it's just living a better life. You just feel like a cleaner person when you don't be a bag of shit. Like, this quarantine, I remember right before it started, dude, I was like going, making good cash to go to clubs like The Stand and like do sets. And I was walking in with this fucking attitude, like, oh, I gotta go leave hanging out with friends to go do another set, like do my dream job.
Yeah.
Like, just taking everything for fucking granted, like not performing at my best. And then, like, through the quarantine, gained a fuck ton of weight. Like, probably
How much did
shot
you
up.
put on? How much did you put on?
Dude, I probably put on like 70
How?
over the quarantine.
How?
Dude, I
How?
ordered Grubhub 3 times a day,
Breakfast?
breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
You
Didn't.
rich motherfucker, dude. You
Dude,
got breakfast Grubhub? I've never once in my life ordered breakfast
well, it's not
from
breakfast. It's like wake up at fucking
noon,
4 p.m. and order
4 p.m.
dinner as, and it's like 3 dinners. That's all it is.
Oh my God,
So
that's
I did that forever.
you got money, dude. You
I
got
had my, it's all gone. It's all
Grubhub.
gone.
Should bought stock in Grubhub, dude. Good
Dude, I'd be,
God.
I'm gonna be fucking rich. But like, I gained all this weight, like 70 pounds over the quarantine, and like now I, for the first time, like today, I was like, I'm grateful that happened.
How do you gain? Once you get to 30, you gotta be like, holy shit, I got 30 extra pounds on me. You're like, nope, it's you're like, I'm OCD. 70 means a lot to me. I'm just gonna keep going. And I don't, how do you, didn't you get to a, I'm so sorry, love, because I think you're such a good looking guy that like, yeah, and I, if I, because listen, dude, when I'm your age and I, if you got a good face, it gets
Yeah.
you a lot of pussy. Women
Yeah, I'm
probably love
retired
you.
now, though, dude. I'm retired.
You have a girlfriend, I know that, but what I'm saying is still we have a vanity that it's like the idea of, all right, bro, I was addicted to OxyContin for 14 years, and I mean functioning at a high level,
Right.
killing it, nobody had any idea, but I was still so vain. Like, I would go to downtown LA, spend $200 buying Perk 30s off this dude Larry, snort them. Didn't even check the pill to make sure that it was 100% and a Perk 30. Could have been whatever. And I
Yeah.
still wouldn't eat dairy. You see what I'm saying? Like, I was so vain that I was like, the pill, which is killing me,
Yeah.
I'll do 10 of those a day, but I won't eat a piece of bread
Yeah,
because it might fuck my
meanwhile,
stomach up.
I was fucking snorting dairy, dude. I was
Dude.
just like, but this is the problem, is I have a good face and I feel like
Great face.
my face hides 100. Like, I feel like I get to like 350, I could still kind of rock, but like the thing that made me actually realize like how much weight I put on, I sparred Luis J. Gomez,
Yeah.
and I was like, wow, I'm out of shape. Like, I didn't it that's when it hit me, because before that I was like, yeah, I'm getting thick, but you just like kind of shrug it off. You're like, I'll sweat this shit out, that's fine, I'll wake up earlier, then I'll just fucking melt it off. But this is the first time where I'm like, I'm fucking working out like either every day or every other day, actually enjoying it, and like your fucking brain feels good. Like, it's the first time my brain has felt good in a
Good.
long time. Like,
Good.
I sent fucking 30 emails today, had the fucking team meeting on the phone, I did all the shit, booking shows, like, and it's the first time I'm like, you need those dark periods, and I'm sure you know this, of like,
Yeah.
you need those periods where you're like, man, my life fucking sucks. I hate how shit's going. Like, where you're like, if a bus hit me today, I wouldn't give a fuck. Like, I don't care. I give my
Yeah.
boots to my brother, and that's it. Fuck it. Yeah. But you, like, you kind of need those times so you can snap out of it, get some hustle out of your, you know, under your ass and get refocused. Like, it's like rebirthing yourself, you know?
COVID, it was a really great time for me. You know, beginning of the year, 2020 was shaping up to be the best year of my life financially with,
I had,
you know, and I think everybody, so I mean, not saying, you know, to the listeners that I was going to have a better year than all you, because I think everybody was excited. We all kind of knew it was going to be a strange year because you have Kobe dying right at the beginning. And, you know, it just, what a weird, even the way it just felt like, fuck, man, maybe this year won't be as fun, or I don't know. You lose somebody so early. And then, you know, I took my mom to Italy, and then COVID, you know, hit while we were there. And then you get back, and it was like, I mean, I got a Porsche in January 2020, because I was like, this year it's going to be hand over fist money.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then within, 5 hours in March, I lost my whole year of touring. I lost the TV show. We didn't lose it immediately, but we knew that we were like, they're going to have to hold off now and not really move forward on production. I mean, it was just like, I lost that, you know, and luckily I still had some money coming in, but I was able, like you said, to be very grateful. Like, throughout the whole pandemic, I had a running mantra in my head of just thank you. Thank you that this happened at this point in my life and this point in my career, where I have money saved. I still have money coming in. I have a place to live. I have a car. I have a dog. I have food. I'm healthy. I'm in California, which is beautiful. And, you know, while all y'all were out in New York really, you know, dealing with it, because it was bad here and, you know, in winter and blah, 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 blah. Like, I mean, I had a tan. I was walking the hills. I couldn't have been happier to have a break for a moment. And it also really made me appreciate, you know, stand up and how much I loved it, which is now what brings me here to New York to be like, oh, well, you know, all I want to do is stand up. That's all I care about. All the other projects I can still work on from here. That's the one good thing that really came from COVID, is that, you know, we can do podcasts this way. We can, you can do auditions. You can do everything from anywhere in the country. So I don't need to be in Los Angeles. I can be in New York.
Yeah. I mean, you're literally 5 blocks down the street from me right now,
which is hilarious.
We'll zoom it.
And I'm like, I don't give it. This is great.
Yeah.
But you know, those dark periods, you know, are still going to come. I mean, I've had moments throughout the pandemic and even now, where I get into a headspace that is negative. And I mean this, because, you know, there is an age gap, and I hate to be that guy that's like, well, I'm older, and you know, you just gotta wait, man, because the older you get, you figure it out. It's the God's honest truth about life, is we put so much weight on high school, you know, we put so much weight on how we're perceived in high school, and then college, and then our 20s, and especially if we get into the entertainment industry like we did, then it's even more weight, because it's like, well, I'm great, and like, why aren't I getting this shit? And like, we beat ourselves up, and then we pick ourselves up when it's a great show, and when we have a bad set, we were like, we suck. And it's just back and forth and back and forth. And just, I'm telling you, the older you get, the more you realize it. None of it makes a difference, and you need to be happy about every second. I went through like a midlife crisis at 38, which is very young for a lot of people. You know, most guys are having them at 50, because, you know, because once you get to that certain age where you're like, holy shit, like, I'm like, I got the gray hair, I look like this, you know, my dick's not working the way it used to, whatever. And at 38, I was depressed all the time. And I had just had the goddamn Comedy Jam TV show had just gotten canceled, but I still had a shitload of money. I had a great, you know, I'm a regular at all the clubs in Los Angeles.
Show idea too.
Thank you, man. We're bringing it here to New York. The announcement will be coming soon. It's going to be the biggest show here in New York.
Yeah, it's the one, so awesome.
You know,
it to folks who don't know. That's such a fucking cool show.
So it's a show where stand-up comics do some stand-up. Then they tell a story about why they chose the song they're going to sing. And then they sing a cover song with a live band. And yeah, it's not karaoke. It's real rock and roll, real. Like, the band is so incredible. I give everything at the beginning to show everybody that this isn't just some bullshit thing. Like, it's going to be a party. So if you give yourself over to it, it'll be the best show you ever see. And it is. And no ego. Yeah,
I've seen like YouTube clips. You can go on YouTube, type in the goddamn Comedy Jam. It's just fucking awesome. Like, if you like, it's just so much fun. It gives you that feeling in your chest of like, this is so cool. Like,
yeah,
so few pieces of content give you that, you know? So it's like, I remember seeing that and being like, this is the fucking coolest thing. You've had such dope guests on it too.
Everybody's done it. I mean, and I say everybody's done it, from Kevin Hart to Dave Chappelle. You know, we've been really, really lucky with it. And I'll tell you, Lev, you know, the only reason it was successful was because what we said earlier, it's like, I just put love into it. I said, I just want to do something that would be fun. Just like with stand-up. Now, all my sets are fun, because right before I go up, I'm like, I just want to have fun. And then I go up there and I don't give a shit if the audience likes me or not. Just have fun. Yeah. And then if I'm having fun, they're going to have fun. And
that's
show,
one of the most helpful things to ever say to yourself before a set is just have fun.
Just have fun. That's
if you're having fun, they're going to fucking have fun.
Yeah.
And almost every time.
And the Jam is the epitome of that, because I was at a precipice in my life. In my career, dude, this is the craziest shit. This is how the world comes full circle, dude. Like, so in 2013, I got new faces just for laughs. I went with like Pete Davidson, Andrew Santino, a bunch of my buddies now, Sam Morrell. And I was still DJing at a strip club at the time, right? Because, you know, God gave me a gift of gravel voice, and I'm the greatest strip club DJ that ever lived. But I come back to LA and nothing happened. No manager, no big agent wants me. I'm still with my same shitty agent, Scroggle Nuts. And I had to go back to work, and I was depressed and I was frustrated because I wanted so much. I put so much on that festival. Now, little did I know that all the stuff that I was going to get from JFL was just in the mail. It just hadn't hit me yet, because I needed to do more, because everybody was like, well, we don't know what to do with you. You sing, you do this, you do that. So I'm getting ready to move to New York. I call Patrick at the Stand. I'm like, dude, I'm thinking about coming to New York. And he's like, dude, if you come out, you know, I can't guarantee you'll be going up every night, but I'll work you in. Yeah. This is 8 years ago. So it's like totally different comic at the time. And so I go, you know what? I had this show idea. Let me just try to do it beforehand. And it was almost kismet with, I remember this guy's like, hey, I want you to host a show. And I go, well, I got the show idea. I pitch him the show. And he goes, dude, it's brilliant. And then he goes, you know, well, we should get started. And I'm like, yeah, it'll never work. You know, let me think about it for a few days. And then the next day I'm at the store and Burr is on stage, and Burr gets off and he just is like, people are like surrounding him and asking him questions. And then he sees me and he beelines over to me. And we used to jam together at this theater called on Seward, which is a street in LA called the Unknown Theater. And that was where the show was conceived. That's where I met the band. And Burr's like, dude, you know, we should jam again. And I go, well, I got this show idea. And he goes, dude, I'm in. I tape my special in June. Can you set it up for July? And then once I had Bill, I was well, now it'll sell out.
Right, right.
So, and then I stumbled into the Lyric. We found the venue. And then the rest is history. It became, you know, one of the biggest shows in Los Angeles immediately. And the party after the show was legendary, and it was just a hangout. And every once a month, everybody that was anybody in LA was at the Jam, which is what we're going to do here. We're going to do that.
Oh, because, dude, I'm so excited. That's
it's going to be fucking cool, man.
Do you play instruments as well, or do you just sing?
I noodle around on a bunch of them. Yeah. I'm like, I can
feel
play,
like, you could play everything a bit.
A little. I'm a C at like five or six instruments. I'm like a B at a couple, and I'm like an ED at a few others. Like, if you gave me a piccolo, like, I could figure it out.
Right, right.
You have that. You have
that.
Well,
I will, motherfucker.
So. Okay. You have a piccolo?
No, I just got one guitar here now. That's all I got left.
That's great. Do you play?
Yeah. I play a little bit. I probably like play like how you play. Like,
you noodle.
Yeah. You know,
nothing wrong with noodling.
I fucking bought a quarantine. I really overspent on a fucking quarantine guitar.
What'd you get?
I bought a Gibson Les Paul Gold Top.
Fuck you, dude. Yeah, I know. Spent some money.
I spent some money.
for Noodler.
Yeah, but fucking, it's funny because I feel like a lot of our relationship is you being like, listen, I feel like conversations has even started like, listen, man, as you get older, you're just going to realize, like, you give fucking good advice. I feel like I gravitate towards that.
I could be a life coach. I could be a Tony Robbins public speaker, bro, because I've been through the world. The universe has given me the business.
Yeah.
And I'm here, you know, because I can't tell you how many times in my life, Lev, I've been like, I don't know how I'm ever going to get out of this situation, man. It feels like the walls are closing in on me. I feel like, I've only been suicidal once, and that was after my friend Angelo died. And I was a full blown junkie, and I literally did drugs to overdose, but I just never did. And I mean, even when I was younger, it's just, I think I've had so many moments where I fucked up. And I'm like, my parents are mad at me, or I got arrested, whatever the fuck it was. And obviously it worked out, because right now I'm sitting in an apartment in the Upper East Side talking to one of my buddies, you know, about
like
comedy and about life.
Fur, baby.
Exactly.
All worth it.
And I also feel like I see a lot of myself in you, man. Like, I really do. I'm not a bad looking guy. Life is like, I'm sorry to put this where I don't sound like a fucking douche.
Dude, this is my podcast. Like,
so everybody, you can be as douchey as podcast. Yeah, okay. Yeah. So, okay, thank God. All right, I'm the shit, sexiest man alive. I'm 5'9", but I feel like I'm 6'4". But I see a lot of myself, because you're a hustler, you work hard, you're funny. There's a lot of potential. There's a lot of upside. And even last night when we were talking about the seller, and you were like, God, I think I could do it now. Yeah. And like, my advice to you about anything that you're like, I could do it now. If you think there's nothing wrong with waiting a little bit longer. Always, because you get one shot to make that first impression. And one of my problems in my career was that I wanted it quickly. And by doing that, you can actually hurt yourself. And there's nothing wrong, because, dude, I'm telling you, a year is going to fly by like this, and then 2 years is going to fly by like that. It's just, it moves so quickly. It's just literally like, I feel like I just started a week ago and I'm already 13 years into comedy August 1st. Yeah. So you're hungry. And when you're hungry and you have drive, you're going to be successful. But, you know, it's not always on the timeline that you want.
Yeah, well, I had the same realization yesterday where I was like, man, I should wait. I was like, I know I can do it now, but I was like, I should do it when I'm like even past that point of like,
yeah,
like, man. And I was talking to comics I really respect, and they were like, dude, take the summer, like, get your shit like really fucking proper, and then like see where you're at, and then, you know, go do it. I'm like, all right. That, even then, I'm like, I can do this at my pace. Like, there's no fucking rush. Like, there's that great story, like JFL, you know, when it was like a huge thing, like Kevin Hart, they offered it to him. And I think he was like 5 years into comedy. I don't know if you ever heard this story.
Oh, no, I know the story from Jay. And I think I also heard it on a podcast.
Yeah. Barry Katz was his manager, and they offered him JFL. And Kevin Hart was like, I'm going to do it. Like, it's my time to break out. And his manager told him, like, look, I know they offered it to you, and it's a big deal to have him offer it. And it's like a big point for young comics. And he was like, I'm just wait another year. He's like, you're great now, but another year you'll be even better. And he like turned down like the biggest thing that could have helped him at that point. And he turned it down, had the discipline to wait another year and then go do it fucking properly. And it's like, I feel like your timing is so important in life. Like, whether it's in your career and relationships, it's like timing just always is such a fucking factor. Like, meeting somebody at the correct point, like, My brother, for example, he, like, there's a chick he still thinks about where he's like, from time to time, where he's like, man, that girl was so great. She wanted to be in a relationship. I didn't. And it was because I just moved to New York and like was like, I'm not going to settle down. I got to fucking see what's going on here, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And now he's, you know, it's just a fucking timing issue.
Dude, I got JFL at 5 years into stand-up. 5 years. And, you know, Was I funny at 5 years? Yeah. Was I ready to handle performing in front of everybody that could change my life in the industry? No.
No, because you don't know who you are in your art yet at that point.
No.
Like, yeah, that's... That's the whole fucking thing. It's just like, I mean, not only in what we do, but just like figuring out what the fuck you do. I can't remember who said it, but somebody was like, the whole point of life is figuring out self-awareness and like figuring, like self-knowledge is like the ultimate goal. But
that's I feel like I'm at that place right now. I feel like that's why I can be so comfortable. And still shit doesn't fly always, you know, the way that I want it to. I still have some sets. I still psych myself out certain times, but you know, I've been able to, you know, have these big opportunities and crush those opportunities because, you know, I'm ready for them. And I failed other times to know how to handle, you know, the weight and how to remove weight from the situation. That's a big thing that people don't realize is that, you know, we put so much weight on those things. So let's say you could work and work and work for a summer and then go up in front of that showcase and just annihilate it. Or you go right now. And let's just say you don't even change your set. Your set's the same set now that it is by the end of the summer. But you might not be ready to be able to handle that weight right now, because maybe that set that's going to open your eyes to that weight and how to dismiss it and not let your heart start racing and not fall into like my mouth's dry and I'm nervous or whatever it is. That shit takes time. Some people right from the beginning, they can just remove all of that. Gerard was that kind of guy where he just
had that feeling in a really long time.
Really?
God, really? I mean, I've been doing this like 7 years now. So like, but when I go do like an audition for something now that's like stand up, like as soon as I get that nerve thing, I just immediately say to myself, fuck them. Like, what? I'm going to be nervous for them. Like, they can go fuck themselves. And like, that always takes me right out of it.
That's not a bad way to be. I wish I could do that back then. But, you know, for me, I had to fail. I had to fail epically. Epic.
Well, this is what I was going to say. You have this fucking, like, I think what makes you such a, like, cool is not even the right word. Like, but, like, you just seem so comfortable with who you are. There's authenticity there, which I think, like, everybody, like, you have your own vibe. When you walk in, like, your presence is felt. I never feel like you're in your head trying to figure out a situation with the people around you. Like, it just feels like you're naturally living life. You're here in that moment. You know what I mean?
Took time.
That's all self-awareness, I think.
But I'm telling you, bro, it took time. It's weird. I was like, when I talked about when I first started my career, I was just like I am now. And then I had a traumatic event happen to me where I lost my best friend. And then I fell into this. I got so in my head about everything because I assumed everybody felt this one way. Yeah, about me
building prison walls in your fucking head.
And I lived in that for 6 years, six long years, slowed down my career. Yeah. I mean, I did things in that time. I did JFL. I created the Jam.
Yeah. Sorry. My fucking Zoom just like glitched out.
Okay. But
we were talking about how like self-awareness is the fucking goal. You were saying it took you a while to get there. But my question is, do you feel like that self-awareness only grows when shitty things happen to you?
Yes. 100%. 100%,
right?
You need to, how do I put this? You need, see, this is, Big J hears me say all this stuff. He's going to make fun of me so much. He's going to be like, it's so LA. LA was the, I'm telling you, man, you know, for everything bad thing people say about it, a lot of the LA, you know, traits, it taught me a lot. To prepare me to be comfortable and to be okay and to be present, because that's the key to all this, you know? And you're going to learn more from something bad than you will from something good. If you're constantly handed shit, you're going to be a dick to people because it doesn't make a difference. It's just like, you're going to keep getting stuff. Yeah. That's why you see some of these comics now, you know, who never worked a day in their life, you know, not naming names, but, you know, are getting called out for the way they treat women because they had everything and never had to work for anything. When you struggle, you build like character and it builds, you know, sound mind, because you know that you had to get out of all that stuff. And when you accomplish getting out of something so tragic or whatever, it just makes you more and more comfortable and more confident. Dude, I'm telling you, man, like I wouldn't, you know, would I change some things in my life? Of course I would, but I'm fine with it. And I'm like, yeah, dude, it's like, it's something that you have to learn. And once when you learn these things, you know, apply them. Cause I always feel like life is literally the meaning of life is you fuck up and then you grow. And that's, mm-hmm. and that's it, man. You have to make the mistakes, but learn from your mistakes. Cause if you keep repeating the same mistakes, you know.
Well, I think that's so fucking dope that you said that, but like, it's such a crazy time now because like, if you fuck up, like you might never get the chance to grow with your, like ever.
No.
Like it's a whole other fucking game now. It's like, I think you said it so beautifully, but how do you do that today? Like, I'm always worried that like somebody's going to say I fucked up. I don't know what it's going to be. I don't know what but it's like, there's that fear of people are getting in a lot of fucking trouble nowadays. And I really think we're at that point where like, if you were an asshole to somebody, like that story's coming out.
They're calling, like, they dude, Ellen. Ellen is getting called out. That just shows you that anybody can go down. Yeah. But luckily, I wasn't a dick to people. You know what I mean? I treated women with respect. I mean, I've always,
All right, let's not be ridiculous. No, I'm kidding.
When I was younger, it was just like you said, like I'm not saying like shit was handed to me, but you know, when I drank, it was like I was just partying. And next thing you know, you end up with a chick for the night. And then once I stopped drinking at like 27, it's like, I wasn't doing stupid shit anymore. And I at least had the sound mind to make a really cognizant decision about how to treat a lady or whatever. I'm not saying I didn't tell a girl off. You know, you're being a bitch, whatever. Like, but she probably told me off if I was being a dick. And you learn. And once you learn, you just don't, like I said, you don't make that mistake again. I'm not a racist. So I don't say racist shit, you know, and I'm not like, you know, a fucking predator. I'm at a point now, and I have been for years, where it's like, I just want to do my shit, do my career, hang out with my dog, and that's enough. I don't want to be Bill Burr. I don't want to be fucking anybody but myself. And all I want to do is just have a life where I don't have to worry about money and just be able to enjoy it. And like we said earlier, man, be a nice guy. Just be nice. Lead with love. This is all that shit that LA taught me.
Yeah. I'm about to fucking throw up.
I know it's like
even after an hour of just complimenting you and how dope you are, I'm like, ugh.
Oh God, what a fucking lame-o.
So you can't even say the word you want to say.
I know, I can't.
But they know what we're talking about.
Yeah.
What made you, really quick, what made you stop drinking at 27?
I got my third DUI. So I got a DUI at 20, one at 22, and I got one at 26. And
you didn't want to be Moped Josh anymore, huh?
I was actually really, really lucky with the DUIs because I got them before they really cracked down on them. So the first one got dropped. I wrecked my car, but the first one got dropped. Second one, I went to jail for the night, but I only got probation and had to go to alcohol classes. And then the third one, I had alcohol classes and a breathalyzer and probation. So I didn't do any jail time. I didn't do anything. But, you know, we talked about learning. I realized immediately on that third one, I remember like waking up that morning in my parents' basement. And I got arrested right in front of my parents' house. Like, it's like because the cops started following me and I was like, I'm just going to get home. I'm going to like get out of the car and go inside. And I get out of my car and the fucking cop just like just throws me in a chokehold. And she's like, why were you running? And I was like, where'd you come from? And she's like, I've had my lights on for like a mile. And I was like, oh man, I thought those were the Christmas lights. Cause it was December. Yeah. And that didn't work. And I just told her to arrest me. And I remember waking up the next morning. Cause all they did is book you and then do the breathalyzer, book you. And then they release you. But they tow your car. And I was just so embarrassed. I was like, man, because I wasn't a good drinker. I always had to do coke. I always had to do something to get me up, Adderall, whatever it was. And I was over it. I mean, I've been doing it for like 10 years and I was like, I'm done. And I want to, because I know if I keep drinking, I'm going to keep getting DUIs. Yeah. And it's expensive. And that's a bad feeling, man. When the cop's lights come on behind you after a couple beers, you're going down. I hate that feeling. And yeah, I experienced it like a few times. So I stopped. And I mean,
that your DUI rationale is not like, I could have killed somebody. It's like, it adds up. It gets pricey.
It does. Well, because I wasn't like, only the first DUI was me being stupid. Where I was speeding. I talk about it on stage now. I was like, you know, 20 years old and I'm like going 80 miles an hour down a 2-lane road, you know, listening to Metallica. And I could have killed me and my friend. And I would have, dude, if I would have hurt my friend Joel, oh my God, I wouldn't be able to live with myself. I'd be in jail probably still. Right. Well, no, I'd probably be out by now.
You do manslaughter, you do like 5 or 6.
I'd say about 16. You get about 16.
So? I thought they give you like 8 years and then you get out on good behavior.
No, I think maybe you're right. Maybe a different time. That being said though, it was like, I was just done. Cause I drank myself out of so much pussy. Like, yeah. I mean, girls that were like throwing, like this hot girl is into me. And then I just kept drinking. And she's like, why would I want to hook up with this dude? He's a fucking mess. So I stopped. And then I started doing opiates, and opiates were great. I mean, if you could just do them a little bit, do them. You're not going to be able to because they're so dope. But I stopped drinking, and I supplemented opiates as the way of drinking. So instead of like having a drink before a show, I'd take like a Vicodin, and it was great. But then I became a junkie, functioning junkie. I have to always say that. But you figure it out. And I'm the kind of person, I'm an addict still, and I'll always be an addict. So I don't look at, you know, let me say it again. I'm addicted to everything I do. So whether it's the bad shit or the good shit, I'm just addicted. I live my life on a very strict routine. Wake up the same time, go to bed the same time. Right now is a little fucked up because I'm in New York and I don't have my dog. But once I get the dog out here, I'll be up early in bed after my shows. But you know, it's more or less like, you know, you just have to, have that self-awareness that, you know, that you're like, man, you drink for 20 years, 25 years, however long it is, you know, if you're not in the place that you want to be, you have to say, well, why not?
Right.
And you're like, oh, well, it's alcohol.
Yeah, because I feel like I'm already at that fucking point where, like, dude, I just, like, never enjoy boozing anymore. Like, I have this, like, because the last time I drank, it was, like, during quarantine in the parking lot of a strip club. Because at 10 o'clock, they had to shut down the bar, but you could get pussy till 4. So, like, we ordered a fucking Postmate to bring boxed wine. We're just slamming boxed wine in the parking lot. And after that, I was like, I'm just not... I gag when I think of alcohol.
Yeah,
I don't enjoy it. Like,
lost my taste. I'm, you know, I think I told you that I did have, like, I say I haven't drank in 15 years, but it means I really haven't drank regularly in 15 years.
Right.
I've had some drinks in between.
Today.
I'm on 6 right now.
Yeah, no, I go to the gym.
I had a drink. Sober? I had a drink at my buddy Sal's wedding, and I was just not connecting, and everybody was having such a good time. And I was like, let me just have one. And I drank it and I was like, what? This isn't me. That was a long time ago. And I didn't, the idea of waking up with a hangover at 41 does not sound fun. And I mean, it's, you just lose your taste. And the best thing about living here in New York is you see, especially going down by where the Cellar is, because it's all NYU students just fucking shit-faced, falling over, peeing in the street, throwing up, making a fool of themselves. And once you start seeing that and you realize that's how you looked, you're like, done. I'm done.
But not only that, but like another huge thing that like nobody talks about, and I'm not trying to victim blame here, but like a lot of like young chicks will get fucking hammered, like blackout drunk, fuck a guy, not remember it. And now you got a dilemma where you're like, she's like, what did I want to do? What did I not? And you can't fucking remember anything. It's like, That's going to fuck up how, you know, how you look at the situation. Like, this happens a lot. I heard, like, Jordan Peterson talking about it, of, like, one thing that's super consistent with so many of these, like, incidents is alcohol. And it's, like, it a lot of young people, man, it like, will put you in a fucking bad place where, and, you know, that's, and I'm not saying, obviously, I'm not being, like, yeah, well, if you drank, what did you expect? But, like, it's just, you're just introducing a new risk factor and, like.
Bro, I got so much pussy when I drank. So much. I was living in Baltimore. I remember I'd wake up in the morning, you know, in a girl's bed, and you'd be like, how'd I get here? And then you tell your buddy, you'd be like, what, like, how'd you get laid last night? You're like, dude, I don't know. I was, one minute I was at Blockbuster Video, the next thing you know, I was fucking. And it's just like, you, it's just because you're so, it's always a haze, and it's just,
it's such a different thing for men and women. Like, if we get drunk and wake up at a chick's place, we're like, man, how did I get my way here? Like, I got some pussy last night. Like, if a chick wakes up blackout in a dude's place, she's like, do I get to leave?
Yeah.
It's like a, it's like a whole other.
Is fucking, he kidnapping me?
Yeah. Dude. Yeah. I want to thank you so much for fucking coming on, man. I'm glad.
Of course, brother.
I'm glad we finally got a proper fucking chat, you know?
This was fun.
You have, Josh has a podcast that is, like, everything this guy does is a fucking dope idea, but he took the Rolling Stones top 500 albums of all time. Every week you break down an album from the list with, like, somebody who knows that fucking artist. It's so dope. You guys need to check it out. Josh is also a hilarious comic. Look up the fucking goddamn Comedy Jam, and if you're in New York, come see my man at a show.
Yeah, check out my dates if you're looking. Social media at Josh Adam Myers on all social media, and just joshadammyers.com for all things jam, baby.
Yeah, Josh, you're the man, bro. Thank you for coming on.
My pleasure, buddy.
Yeah, and folks at home, join the fucking Patreon. Patreon.com/lovefur. Jump in. There's going to be a new episode this Friday, and we'll fucking see you guys there, man. We love you all. Dude, I'll talk to you soon, man.
Later, buddy.
All right, brother.
Here I'm figuring you're done, I'm assuming. Are you gonna cut this part?
Hold on, let me stop recording.
Okay.